I'm Brian Kaplan, at Brian Kaplan on Twitter, and you're listening to A Dark Companion.
You're listening to A Dark Companion, a Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts podcast. Today we're talking about chapters 13 and 14, and I've got another guest with me today. Guest, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hey, Zero, I'm Brian Kaplan, and on Twitter I'm at Brian Kaplan.
Excellent. Well, just a note, this is the second time we've recorded the beginning of this podcast. I was making a bunch of mistakes, but I think I've got that straightened out. So, we're doing two chapters for this episode because chapter 13 is particularly short, so we wanted to give plenty of time to talk and discuss things and, I don't know, maybe tie the two chapters together. So chapter 13 is called Someone is Calling, and the portal icon for it, and if you want to follow along with what I'm talking about, I'm looking at itwantstogetout.tumblr.com. It's a blog that I do all about each chapter of Dark Hearts and kind of analyzing everything in it. Lots of screenshots and things posted. So the portal icon for this one is a close-up of Dr. Carraway, or Mrs. Carraway, although she's referred to that entirely in Dark Hearts, it seems to be, as Mrs. Carraway. But I had to go back into the first app, Haunting Melissa, and see if anybody actually calls her doctor. Because all they say is she's like a grief counselor, right? I don't know if she's actually a doctor, but I guess she is. And the picture of her, she's staring at the camera, just looking kind of freaked out. And there's not really any objects in this icon that are attached to the circle like some of the other ones. At least nothing that I can tell offhand. And the quote that I pulled from this chapter is, "There are promises between us," by a voice on the phone. We've got our suspicions and probably certainties as to who the voice is on the phone. So, Brian, did you have any thoughts about this chapter?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, it's a short and sweet chapter, but I think it really reveals about the doctor. You know, she's not, you know, I think up to this point, even with, you know, the first Haunting Melissa, you take her as a woman who's in control of who she is, you know, what she's doing, but in reality, you kind of learn that she's not in control.
Right.
And also, you know, you kind of see how, you know, you can assume the voice is the visitor.
Mm-hmm.
It's that same gravelly voice, and it's another example of the visitor controlling people of power.
Sure.
To get done what he needs to get done.
Right. Yeah, and I wonder how those two got together, how he knows her and she knows him, and it certainly seems like he's steering her along in this thing, and then you start to question everything that we've heard that she's done, you know, dealing with Catherine, dealing with Melissa, you know, really starting to see maybe she's not just being the grief counselor, and she's clearly manipulating the situation.
And what the point would be to manipulate the situation.
Right. Like, what is the goal? And, I mean, the sheer fact that he says on the phone there are promises between us. What promises? What kind of deal did she make with him?
Exactly.
And then one interesting visual note on her computer screen that we see in the beginning, she's got a, looks like a 24-inch iMac, a 27-inch iMac. Looks like she has, it's like a mosaic of, kind of looks like eyes on the screen. I was looking at the discussion board and there were a lot of speculation, whether it being eyes or a girl in a coffin, that kind of thing. And it looks like just a bunch of eyes on her screen, which could be a visual cue that she's being watched.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, you know, even up to this chapter, there's a lot of imagery that's displayed not on, say, the program we're watching, but on the characters' devices and on their walls. And
yeah, a lot of interesting stuff that happens in the background. And I don't know if you did you see an Easter egg for this chapter?
Boy, I gotta think about that.
If you can remember,
One thing about the Easter. The one thing about the Easter egg is you have to catch it after that very initial first time that you watched it.
Yeah,
because it won't pop up. And I'm trying to recall if I remember correctly, it dealt with her.
And that's the thing. Are they always the same for everybody?
Well, that's you know, and that would be something. That would be something to get the listeners to email in or post on the message boards. What they see when they see an Easter egg, what are they seeing for that Easter egg?
Absolutely, yeah. Because I didn't get a lot of them. I started seeing on the discussion boards that people were getting these things. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm not seeing anything. And I didn't really understand how you even went about seeing them. So yeah, any of the listeners out there, if you have any notes or reports about Easter eggs you've seen and what chapter they're attached to, you can either email them to adarkcompanion@icloud.com or go to itwantstogetout.tumblr.com, and there's a link at the very top for submissions, and I will repost those on the blog as well, so we can kind of keep track of things.
Well, I will say that, you know, later on as this app continues, as the movie continues, you really have to pay attention to those Easter eggs, because as the film continues, the regular chapters are pretty dependent upon those Easter eggs.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Sure. I mean, it's kind of a sequence to them too.
Exactly.
I've seen, and the one I got for this one, and I mentioned on the blog that I was typing the entry. I was watching it again. I guess since I never saw it, it actually came up for me. But I left my phone zoomed in on the portal, and I got this weird shot of the visitor, Fedora the Explorer, kind of standing, what looks like in a window, and kind of doing his sinister laugh. Very creepy.
Now, which window was that? Was that a...
Well, the thing is, it's zoomed in so close that you can kind of see a window frame, but I can't tell if it's in a house or what. It's really hard to make out exactly what we're looking at him through.
Because that's an image that'll, if I recall correctly, it's not like that's the only time you'll see that image.
Yeah, that kind of stuff will definitely come back. Is there anything else you can think of for this chapter? I mean, that's pretty much the extent of it. She does react when the phone rings. She kind of jumps, and she was also staring at it when it first came up, as if she was expecting it.
Yeah, because I mean that phone rings and rings, and you know, it's just that she's got to answer, otherwise it's not going to stop ringing type of feeling, and so she answers it, and I think this kind of starts a transition with her character, because you know, in the first Haunting Melissa, and up to this point, she was a very cordial person.
Yeah.
And I think this kind of starts the unraveling of her. She knows something's going to happen at some point, and it's inevitable, and I think this is kind of like the start of it.
Yeah, if I felt a growing suspicion of her chapter after chapter, and this kind of really solidified that for me. Like, I really think she's got... She's involved. I mean, the whole thing about the town being involved and everybody knows, but nobody wants to talk about it. Then her acting as a grief counselor for people that are involved in it, it certainly seems like she's gotten herself in a position to really manipulate the way things are going.
Exactly.
Well, let's get into chapter 14. This one is called Buried Secrets. The portal icon for this one is a two-shot of Emma and Brandon, who I like to imagine is Batman and Robin. You can figure out which one's which. Or Mulder and Scully, kind of. He seems to really be believing in it, and Brandon's very skeptical of the whole thing, although he's seen so much that I don't know how he could still be so skeptical. The objects in the portal icon on the top left corner, there is a stump that looks just like the one right next to where Brandon is digging later in the chapter. And in the bottom right corner, there is the rear bumper of Emma's Impala. Clearly, he's going to be driving, going to that stump, which is what happens. And the quote I pulled for this chapter is, "There is more reality than reality, Brandon." That was said by Emma. Any initial thoughts with this chapter?
Well, you know, Brandon's definitely in some form of denial.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and this is kind of, you know, I'm assuming here that if you're watching Dark Hearts, you've seen the first Haunting Melissa, and if not, you really need to see it. But, you know, all leading up to this point, you know, he didn't really believe Melissa and what she was going through. And now there's other people involved in it. Because, you know, before, it's always just been her.
Right.
Her and Brent, you never saw, he never interacted with any of her friends. So this was, you know, he's in denial. You can kind of tell he acts nervous. And then this girl just shows up. He has no clue who it is.
Yeah. And the chapter opens when we get, well, we have like Emma pulling up outside of Brandon's place, which I guess is at his college. Got a, kind of a girlfriend there. And so it brings up him cheating on her or cheating on Melissa with her. And he just, and in the first Haunting Melissa, the, he was always working on some project, and he was kind of keeping his distance from her and really not buying into the things that she was really concerned about. And then Emma shows up and is trying to kind of pull him right into it. And an interesting thing that you'll see in the beginning of the chapter, and you have to pause and use those frame buttons on the left and right side of the screen, there is a note on Brandon's wall written in those fun letter symbols. And I think I have a file of where he translated part of it anyway. Yep, so what we've been able to figure out is that it says something dark. It should, it seems like it should say something dark is coming, but some of the letters don't match up, but logically, it seems like what it should be.
Interesting. And those letters, I mean, you see that script, even up to this point, you see that script in various places.
Yeah, a lot of the little glitches in between scenes where you have to kind of pause it and tap around, you'll see some of those letters pop up.
But I mean, you know, I think, you know, Brandon's even feeling guilty at this point. I mean, you know, that was the assumption from the first one that he was cheating on Melissa.
Right.
You know, it's, I mean, there's, I guess, well, there's a month's time between the end of the first one and the start of the second one. I guess. I think that's
yeah, I think
accurate.
That's what it, yep. Yeah, one
and so, you know, he's obviously, we find out now that, you know, yes, he was cheating, but now he feels guilty. And
yeah, and she's been gone, and he kind of ignored everything that she was trying to tell him about that maybe he could have been there for. Guilt's definitely building up on him. Okay, so yeah, he's got a picture on his iPad. He also has a strange iPad lock screen, which I can't figure make any sense of that, but it's definitely strange.
Well, and that picture of him and Melissa, that's something important to note for a later time.
Sure. Yes, that definitely is it's very important. Definitely remember that picture.
Definitely screenshot it, and then later on you'll understand why, and you can kind of match up things.
Oh, yeah. And so Emma gets him to go to some kind of a cafe or restaurant with him on to kind of show him the stuff that she's found. So Emma's kind of playing the part of us in a lot of ways in this movie, where she's been looking at the videos that Pixel Face was putting out. So she's kind of going through the first Haunting Melissa movie like the rest of us are, but she's, you know, definitely has a personal stake in it in trying to figure out exactly what the heck is going on. Interesting thing to note, and I read a lot on the discussion boards that people had noticed on the wall behind her at the restaurant, there are a lot of keys mixed in amongst all the pictures. That key imagery is coming back around again.
She's in the process of unlocking the mystery.
Yeah. And also there's an exit sign which appears, and I've seen that brought up a couple of times, how much exit signs appear with Emma around. And so one of the things that she shows Brandon on her iPad are those GPS coordinates from Chapter 10. Did you ever try looking those up?
Yes. Yeah, I did. And it took to a location, I would assume, is the location where they filmed a scene that is pertinent to where that will lead them.
Yeah, and it's kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Yep.
Yeah, I guess it threw some people off because this is supposed to be taking place in and around Kansas, but the coordinates take you to Canada, which is where it was filmed, but, you know, figure that out. Get what they're going for there. And so she shows him lots of different things on her iPad, things that she's noticed, and he's still kind of not getting... I mean, he doesn't understand why she wants to be involved and why she even cares. And so definitely apprehensive about even getting involved with this whole thing.
Yeah, because she doesn't... She's never shared with him how she's potentially connected to all this.
Right.
Yeah. And really to this point, I don't think, you know, I mean, we don't know how did she come upon this information. I mean, you know, she says that, you know, there's this anonymous person who's on the internet.
Right.
And he's posting this stuff. But I mean, you know, the internet's pretty big, so there's more of a story there. How did she come across this information and make connections to what's happened to her as a child to today, the timeline of Dark Hearts?
Yeah, because there's some gaps to fill in from when from Chapter 8 when she's a child and her mother locks her in that trunk and disappears, and, you know, Fedora appears, and her growing up and whether or not this is the first time that her mother has done something like that, and also does she ever come back from this one? Who raises her, and then she grows up, and is she still clearly thinking about what happened? I'm sure that was traumatizing. But then how did she start to gather all her information, and where that's going to lead? Very, very.
And if I recall correctly, she's, as mentioned now, Mr. Anonymous, he's disappeared as well.
Right. Yeah, all of a sudden he stopped transmitting stuff, and she mentioned when she shows him the GPS coordinates that, you know, he knew that somebody was coming for him, and so she's thinking that something, whatever's being hidden there, one, scratch into the desk, they're not going to take the whole desk necessarily, so maybe someone can find something there. But I almost got the feeling like she thought that maybe whatever's hidden there are more files or backups of everything that he had, so they couldn't take them. Oh. Why would Jack have that, you know?
Yep, so then from there, I guess he doesn't believe her.
Right, he's still very, very dubious.
Yep, and so I guess what in the next scene of that chapter, she's back at her hotel room.
Yeah, which is an interesting scene from the camera panning across her bed, and I've got some screenshots on the blog of a lot of the papers she has and like weird symbols and pictures that she's got there. Yet to be able to make sense out of all of them.
And then Brandon shows up.
Yeah, and she's sleeping on the floor between the beds, which is interesting, and I don't know if that's a result of her childhood experience or not. And heck, we even see that she has a guitar, or at least a guitar case in that room. So maybe we're learning a little bit about her. But yeah, Brandon shows up and they decide to go out to where the coordinates lead to. And
which leads to the whole burial site.
Right. The burial site that we saw in Haunting Melissa, if you watch that. Once again, if you are watching Dark Arts and you haven't watched the first one, definitely do that. So we're at the burial site, and Brandon starts digging up different spots around in the grass, trying to find whatever was buried there. And Emma's taking shots and taking photos of the surrounding area and starts to take pictures of where Brandon's digging. And the visitor is making his way towards Brandon, but can't see him. Only in the pictures is he visible.
Yeah, it's the moment he actually finds the spot where the box, the mystery box, is buried, then all of a sudden, you know, I think the first shot we see, things are kind of blurred, which I guess would kind of indicate the method of travel that Fedora takes.
Right.
And then he gets closer and closer.
Yeah, and that kind of teleportation blurry thing, just like we saw with her mother back in Chapter 8.
Which kind of built into the whole purpose of the menu system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder really what that means. I mean, because it, you know, the first Haunting Melissa and parts of this seem like a ghost story. But then there seems to be this other side to it. It's kind of an interdimensional thing. I mean, the quote that I pulled from this chapter, and it kind of stuck with me through this whole thing, is that there's more to reality than reality. Like, there's definitely two sides of the world happening.
Well, yeah, because up to this point, you've got Melissa waking up,
right?
And you've got that whole visual of going through this tunnel. There's this whole visual of, you know, it looks like a wormhole, looks like some kind of a tunnel, and she's, you know, all of a sudden she, you know, wakes up. So, you know, you've got that connection along with Emma's mother, you know, obviously.
Right.
Which is probably just as important as well to note.
Oh, yeah.
Because those portals are pretty important to the storyline.
Yeah, I mean, in the two sides of things, well, one, at the end of the first Haunting Melissa, where we get that kind of ATM video image of Melissa. And after you watch that, the heading for that chapter changes, and it's kind of that same ATM camera visual of Melissa. And as you move your phone side to side, she kind of starts to split a little bit. Like, there's two of her, kind of her moving behind herself. And in Chapter 9, when she wakes up, the DSC that's there, when Melissa goes to walk through the doorway, it looks like Melissa is also sitting on the floor, kind of watching herself walk out that door. And her clothing is different now. There's clearly two sides to Melissa now. There's some kind of a split that's happened.
Correct.
Wonder what it is.
Yeah, so Emma sees these pictures of Fedora approaching Brandon, and so she grabs Brandon. He's got the box.
Mm-hmm.
And they start to take off, and you know, there's the whole visual of her passenger door being whipped open, supposedly from Fedora.
Yeah.
And her screaming, and there's a shot of the box.
On the back seat, yeah. In that box. I feel like it has to relate to the Maynard House ritual. I mean, because Jack has it, and why would Jack have anything except something that related to back then? And I don't know, why bury it, why not burn it, something like that. Oh.
Well, it makes you wonder if there's a real strong connection between the therapist and Jack, and obviously Jack's wife, who's, you know, deceased, and, you know, it makes you wonder.
Yeah, there's a lot of connections to be made, and I'm hoping we get some more answers, and I would love to find out what's inside that box. And, I mean, even Emma's necklace, that little kind of protection amulet, that glass vial, little red thing inside of it, and I would like to know how she got that, what its purpose is. Seems to be protection of her heart, but, I mean, I don't know.
Well, and also the other part would be, is up to this point, we know that Melissa's dad, you know, we know that he's not innocent in all of this.
Right.
We know that he's in some form of danger himself.
Yeah.
And so how does he connect to it? Because it doesn't seem like the therapist, it seems like she's the kind of in danger, but not as much danger as the therapist is.
Right. Yeah, and I don't know. So much to speculate about. I mean, well, they don't call her Dr. Caraway in this part of the movie so far. It seems like it's a lot of Mrs. Caraway, which almost seems authoritarian, like kind of like being submissive to her, like she's in some seat of power. I mean, I don't know. That could be just completely off the wall. But if she's really working with Fedora and the whole bad side of this thing, you know, what's her job? Is she just there to handle people that are making these kind of weird deals or whatever's going on? Is she just there to help facilitate Fedora doing the things that he wants to do?
Yeah, is Melissa her only client that deals with this type of thing?
Ryan. Oh. Is she even really a doctor? She's just a person that got caught up in this and they came up with that as an idea. It's like, you'll act like a grief counselor and you'll deal with these people, convince them they're crazy and stop them from talking and looking into things. Well, wanted to ask you, so how long have you been into this whole thing, Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts? When did it start?
I'm an early adopter. So the first Haunting Melissa was released in I got to date this back here, I believe, but beginning of May, second week of May of 2013. And so I was an early adopter of that and watched all that quite a bit, and then of course, you know, joining the community and kind of, you know, been a cheerleader of the whole phenomenon of it, because, you know, it's not just a movie.
Yeah.
You know, there's no way that you could take you know, Haunted Melissa 1 and Dark Hearts, you couldn't put that on DVD or Blu-ray because of, you know, the whole DSE element to it.
Right. Yeah, it wouldn't do it.
There's not you know, the technology is in the iPad, because, you know, the ability to watch a chapter and then come back and it's different.
Right.
To have that surprise element of it. So, you know, it's, you know, if you read the news and kind of see, you know, it's ahead of the curve in the sense of the DSE aspect of it. But, I mean, you know, there's been a lot of news about movies, you know, being, you know, released, not in theater, but being released, you know, online. So the online aspect and streaming media, and that's in the here and now, and adding an interactiveness to it. That's the future of it.
Yeah, definitely. And it's definitely turning the corner and looking ahead, combining a lot of the things that are just starting to get used, the online releases of things, and the fact that we all have these mobile devices, and yeah, putting it on DVD, and it wouldn't work at all, and you would lose so much of the experience that is pretty crucial to the way this whole story is being told. What are your favorite kind of, what's your favorite thing about the way this whole thing is going? What really drew you into it?
I mean, you know, it really is the DSE aspect of it, to have the changing elements of it. It's not really choose your own adventure, but to, you know, I would find myself, you know, especially with Dark Hearts, taking a screenshot, you know, and then coming back and watching it a second time and taking a screenshot around the same time just to see what the differences are, you know, and how the shot was framed and, you know, the elements of it.
Yeah, it really helps make sure that the viewer, I mean, the viewer is very engaged in the detail of everything.
You know, I would be intrigued. I haven't heard of it before where the Easter eggs change between the individuals. I would suppose that the programming is there to do that, and that would actually be kind of cool if they had that, but I haven't heard of that. I know that, you know, like in the first Haunting Melissa, you know, that it would switch between the first and second viewing, and with the sequel, it's not always the first and second viewing. Sometimes it's the first viewing, and sometimes, I guess, it could be the third viewing.
Right, yeah. I had a couple that way.
I guess the main difference being is with the sequel being streaming versus the first one was, you know, you downloaded the chapter. You have a little bit more control over the content when it's streaming.
Yeah, right, yeah. I was curious about how that whole DSE process works between streaming and download. You know, where download, maybe you're getting two versions of the same clip and then it switches between them, or is it just small snippets that get inserted? Then going to the streaming model, you know, how that plays out, and I don't know if that's a trade secret of their technology, but always been curious about them.
Yeah, because, you know, when you look at, I'm just trying to think of an example of one. You know, there's particular ones where, like Fedora and Melissa will be in the same shot.
Right.
In the DSE. And if you watch one where he's not in it, you know, there's some aspects of zooming out and zooming in the shot. So you can kind of see the difference in the shot. But, you know, you don't really notice it until you watch it a lot. You wouldn't notice that, you know, well, on this DSE here, the shot zoomed out more to kind of allow him to be in the shot.
Right, right. Yeah, and so, and the whole duality thing that we were talking about with, you know, reality being more than reality, you know, thinking of the DSE is not so much as a tool to kind of make things more interesting, but actually as part of the story itself, that, yeah, you didn't see it this time, but you saw it that time. It's always happening, whether you see it or not. This is just a way of seeing through that alternate reality into what's really happening. Makes it much more interesting, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And the for instance, you've got the priest, or the reverend, or, you know, the clergy member, you know, and that wicked smile of his,
mm-hmm,
makes you wonder if, you know, that's kind of an alternative reality that we're seeing there.
Yeah. And always suspicious about what everybody's thinking and who knows what, especially because it seems like the whole town is in on it. So we're seeing him laughing at the coffin shaking, but what is he seeing? He's seeing something different.
And what is he so happy? What's he finding so funny?
Yeah. What is his interest there? Like, it's if he's just the reverend of the town and, yeah, he knows about whatever that happened in the past, I don't think he would find that funny. So what is it?
And then that also leads to the fact of, you know, correct me if this is, I'm pretty sure this is before this point, but, you know, there's a funeral scene, which I kind of, you know, briefly talked about regarding, you know, the Fedora showing up at the church, that was a church.
Yeah. That's chapter 12.
There you go. You know, that's a burial of someone we let her learn is important to Dark Hearts. not to give away something after the chapters that we're covering, but I mean, it makes you why is that taking place in Melissa's town, for example?
Right. Yeah. Cause there's information that comes out later about the distance, and it doesn't really add up, which makes me wonder, is it a dream or is it an actual vision? Like, are things really happening? And I never know with this. Very confusing. Well, you're a bit of a filmmaker as well, am I correct?
I'm an aspiring filmmaker. I mean, you know, I have, I've scripted stuff out. It's a very long process.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I know that, you know, I'm sure Neil Edelstein's listening and he would agree with it. I know that the Haunting Melissa project was a long one coming. But yeah, you know, I've got ideas, and like most aspiring filmmakers, if I release a whole lot, then I ruin the fun of it. But you know, my hopes are that hopefully stuff can start unraveling here starting this summer and fall. And you know, I will say that Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts is very, you know, it inspires a lot. I mean, it inspired you to do the podcast and you know, the blog, and I know that it's inspired other people to do some, you know, to do other projects. If I recall correctly, on Twitter, I read about a book that has some form of element of it that was kind of inspired just, you know, by Neil Edelstein, if I remember correctly.
Oh, really?
And I'm trying to recall the title of the book. I'll have to pull that up. But so yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it's a very, you know, Haunting Melissa is very inspiring. And it's affected, how I, you know, I intend on doing my project. You know, it's something that I've had scripted out, and I've probably re-scripted a lot. You know, and my background, is in, media, you know, media related. I've worked in radio and television and, even with social media. So I've always, you know, that's the one aspect about Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts is the involvement of all media.
Right.
You know, with the first Haunting Melissa, you know, you had the characters had social media accounts. You know, they had Twitter accounts, and they tweeted out, kind of, you know, along around the same time when the app was first released. And so that was one aspect that drew people in. Even, you know, Mr. Anonymous, you know, he had a Twitter account,
mm-hmm.
Which kind of was a play on his real name, you know, and he released images. And so having that aspect, I think that draws a lot of people into it as well.
Sure.
So.
Definitely. Well, if maybe farther on down the road when you can talk more about your project, I'd like to have you back on, or just to talk about another chapter. That'd be cool.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm all for it. And you know, of course, you know, off the record, you know, off the air, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, I've talked to several people about it, because you know, it's a project that I'm doing. It's definitely pre-production, and I'm always looking for help with it. It's not something that, you know, I'm expecting to make any kind of a profit on. It's kind of a social experiment, if you will.
Excellent.
Because you know, the Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and I guess even Pinterest, and you know, it affects our lives. Even people who don't use social media, it affects them as well. So
yeah, I mean, I primarily use social media for Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts. After Haunting Melissa was gone, I barely touched Twitter, and then Dark Hearts came out, and now I'm on Twitter every day, all day.
Well, I've always used Facebook quite a bit, and then, when Holly and Melissa came out, I started using Twitter like it was, insistently using Twitter. I mean, if you look at my account, I would probably say good chunk of my Twitter feed is Holly and Melissa stuff. I think I've been deemed as, I don't know if, you know, I'm forgetting what I someone's given me a title, calling me the super fan or something of, Haunting Melissa.
Nice.
I think it's, they're kind of like with Dark Hearts, as we'll see, as you do more chapters and, revealing a lot of what is seen, it doesn't end with the second one.
Right.
I think there's a lot of answers that take place, and there are more that unravel. But the only way we're going to see more is if we, keep talking about it and get others to view it. And it's a very entertaining form, it's a very entertaining film, and, it's... the season is like $6, I think, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
$6, $7. And, that's the first Haunting Melissa started off being around $15 for the season, and now it's down to $6. Last I checked. So, I mean, it's a form of entertainment that extends. I mean, how many movies have you seen that you talk about it for several months?
Exactly. Yeah, you definitely get more value out of it. Regular movie.
And I know that Neil Edelstein's got other stuff he's going to release out as far as, talking about Dark Hearts and stuff. I know I've seen some pictures of the robot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm intrigued. It's very inspiring, and I know that it's a project that the individuals that have made it are. It's a project of love, and not just something that they're solely just making a profit on.
Right.
So
definitely something that they care about personally. So that one of the things that inspired me to start creating all this content and really get into the movie is that you got to respect a vision and somebody trying to get it done. It's not big production, huge movie studio kind of a thing. It's an idea that a bunch of people just took and ran with and are amazing.
Well, and I would be intrigued also to go back to the first Haunting Melissa and look at the hidden imagery in that, because I mean there was a lot in the first Haunting Melissa that was never really unlocked, and so you've got this blog that's shown all this that's been unlocked with the second one, with Dark Hearts.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe that'll give some answers that you don't see on the screen.
Yeah, I just recently started going back and watching the first one again, and there's been quite a bit of refresh done with the first one. So there's some interesting things that some of us who have been around the movies for a while don't even know is there yet. And so definitely go back and take a look at that. There's either things that are brand new or things that I just don't remember. So it's definitely good to go back and kind of update yourself on it.
Well, and also, if you were an early adopter of Dark Hearts, you really need to go back and, just pull up the menu and let that menu run and listen to the audio in there. There's a lot of stuff that goes on in that menu that doesn't take place within the individual chapters themselves. There's a lot of things said that are never really mentioned in the movie itself.
Mm.
And then really look at that starscape and look at all the stuff that's not only around each of the portals, but floating around, in the background of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of little detail that's important.
Well, and the other thing is when those Easter eggs pop up, you really need to take a screenshot of those new mini portals popping up.
Right.
big other stuff hidden in those portals as well. So maybe that's something where you can email the support, say, hey, reset me to square one.
Yeah, not a bad idea, actually.
And see if, you know, we can get some screenshots of it. And just know that, you know, when you're done watching that first chapter, watching that chapter for the first time, you really need to, you know, get ready and start screenshotting.
Interesting idea. I didn't even think about that. Have it reset.
Huh. So, there's much more to be revealed as far as Dark Hearts is concerned.
Yeah, I've been talking about that a lot on the discussion board, especially in the chapter 25 section where people are like, oh, it's over, blah, blah. Like, it's not over yet. There's still so much going on. There's things to rewatch. There's screenshots to look at, to talk about. So I want to thank you for coming on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Not a problem. So those of you listening, once again, you can check out what we've been talking about on itwantstogetout.tumblr.com. And there's a submission link at the top of that blog, so you can send us anything that you found that maybe we've missed, or just questions about things that you think are interesting. You can, if you're listening to this podcast on the iTunes podcast app, you can also check out this podcast at adarkcompanion.com. That is the website for the blog, where you can see all the episodes and stream them there. There's even a PayPal donation button if you want, but you certainly don't have to donate anything to the show. Brian, anything else you want to throw in?
I look forward to a few other collaborations with you, and if all else fails, I look forward to hearing about the remaining chapters. We just did 13, 14, and... Yep. There's still quite a bit to unravel here.
Excellent. And there are future special guests that may be coming up soon. So definitely keep an eye out on the Dark Companion stream to see any updates as to what's happening. All right.
And maybe we can get some requests out there. I know that you're having more and more listeners as each podcast comes out. Who would the listeners? Who would they like to? I would like to hear Fedora come on and give us some wisdom.
Oh, that would be fantastic! I saw you mention that in on the discussion boards on Dark Hearts. That would be an awesome get. Hopefully that can happen.
I look forward to. Getting some of the actors on to talk about their roles and their thoughts on everything that's unraveling. Because if you get on Twitter and you look at the various people on Twitter, all the actors are actually they're watching Dark Hearts as well.
Yes, so. I've seen Barb Mitchell's posted quite a bit. I posted something on Instagram, and within 1 minute, it was favorited by Farley, Ron Campbell. Like, all right, they're paying attention. They're involved too. So, I mean, they seem to like it as much as we do.
And there's a lot of, there's a lot of stuff from Honey Melissa One that is not being discussed in Dark Hearts that we, who knows, maybe in the third one we'll get some, what about, Melissa's friends from the first one and what's happened to them. I know that we saw her best friend in that clip with the priest.
Holly, yeah.
Yeah, when Holly was pretty pregnant.
Right.
And it seemed like it was a clip from the future. So, what does that mean? What about Holly's brother?
Yeah, so, Carter, yeah.
So there's a lot to unravel. I mean, everyone who's listening needs to get their friends to friends and family and coworkers to download the app and view and post.
Oh yeah, I'm contemplating doing either a completely separate podcast for Haunting Melissa or maybe some special episodes of this podcast where we just talk about stuff that's going on in the first movie. Kind of help bring things together and give the people that are new and just watching Haunted Melissa something they can listen to without any spoilers.
Sounds good to me.
All right, Brian, well, thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks, Zero.
All right, we'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Bye-bye.